It's time for the Charlotte FC podcast. Bienvenidos, bienvenuti. Here we go again. This time the Crown faced the Philadelphia Union, whom they lost 1-0 last time out back in Philly on May 31st. At the end of 2022, Jim Curtin's club last visited the Queen City, only to be taken down by the Crown 4-0, which also knocked the Union out of first place in the race for the Supporters' Shield and hosting the MLS Cup Final, which they eventually lost to LAFC in Los Angeles. It should be a fantastic match. Today's guest is John McGregor, Charlotte FC's Director of Performance and Sports Science, where he oversees all of the medical and performance department for the club. Prior to working with Charlotte FC, John has been on or led health and wellness teams in MLS since 2011, having stops in Vancouver, Columbus, and Portland. We talk all things performance, his day-to-day, the big picture for Charlotte FC with Crown Legacy and the Academy, as well as his learning from Real Madrid's head and his approach to helping players here be their best. Oh yeah, and he is a big sports fan growing up around Boise, Idaho. Let's do this. Another podcast, another member of Charlotte FC, and today we have John McGregor. I'm gonna have him introduce himself like I do all the guests and let him share kind of his little elevator pitch about who he is and what he does for Charlotte FC. John, welcome.
Thank you, Nick. I really appreciate reaching out and having me on the show here. So as you said, John McGregor, the Director of Performance and Sports Science. I do oversee all of the health and performance department of the club. And so it's quite a big job, quite a new job for myself over the last year and a half as I transitioned, you know, more from the medical side into both sides. So just, you know, trying to take this club forward from both the health and performance side of things.
All right. Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I think it's probably going to be pretty helpful for all of us to have the definitions of what is the performance side versus the health. We've had Tyler Knight on the show, yep. Athletic trainer, definitely the health side, but he also works in high performance. So can you kind of define the lines for us here?
Yeah. So you mentioned a good word there, high performance. So we look at ourselves as a high performance department. And there's a part of me that would include the coaches and management because high performance is the whole club. And there's a lot of communication that goes on. Then when you hear the term high performance, a lot of people think it's the health and the performance. So the health side is more the medical side. So Tyler Knight, someone that I brought in to fulfill his role as the head AT and the rehab coordinator. So he kind of helps myself oversee all of the medical side along with the assistant athletic therapists or athletic trainers. And then you get into the performance side, which people would think is more of your strength and conditioning coaches or performance coaches. And then you could lump in data science, sports science on that performance side as well, where we're looking at multiple different, you know, I'll throw in technologies, but you throw in the GPS and you throw in more of the weight room, you throw in those types of items where the performance strength and conditioning coaches kind of overtake that versus the medical side. But it's all, everything we do is all together. We are always intermixed, interworking together. It's a very complex system. And so hopefully that helps be able to divide the two departments. And then there's myself that oversees it, that hopefully helps combine it all to make sure the fluidity of everything we do is together.
And of course, for the benefit of the individual first and the team and just the organization.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You got it. Always looking at what's best for that player that will also be best for the organization. Exactly.
So you said you're new to this position. I know you've had several successful stints as athletic trainer or head athletic trainer at Portland Timbers, and then you also worked a little bit with the Columbus Crew. Can you talk about how that prepared you for this role?
Yeah, great question. And I'll actually throw in my time with the Vancouver Whitecaps.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's where I got my I'd say my first start professionally with a full-time job, not just an internship. And so being on the health side there, you just kind of think, okay, health. You don't really think about those performance aspects. And as 1-2 years into Vancouver came in, you really start to talk more about the performance side. And then where it really kind of blossomed and took off for me of really saying, okay, hey, there's a lot we need to focus at here in the performance side of the metrics with the GPS and how it's starting to relate into the return to play processes was when I got to Columbus. And I got there in 2015 and Craig Devine brought me in, who's now with Houston. And he really helped me from a head athletic trainer standpoint, how to stay organized, how to communicate with the coaches, how really being a head AT should be. But in my time there, Steve Tashjian, who's now, a consultant, Steve had been with Columbus, went to Everton, came back to Columbus. Steve is one that I really got to learn from and ask a lot of questions and really put my understanding of the, I say, performance side of it with the GPS and with what we do, morning monitoring, testing, and how that all starts to relate into keeping guys fit and healthy within the overall periodization plan for the year for the team. And so that started to correlate for me and start to connect, especially, as I grew in Columbus and went from an assistant when Craig left into the head role, thanks to Greg Berhalter, and being able to get into that position and learn from those guys. And then from there, we are from the Pacific Northwest. I'm born and raised in Boise, Idaho. My wife is born and raised pretty much Tacoma, Washington, just outside of Seattle, for those mm-hmm. who don't know. And when this job in Portland came up, it was, hey, we got to try there. And one thing led to the next. And so then there, still being able to overtake a medical side, Nick Malonis, who's the current, high performance director in Portland, our relationship grew quite a bit and asking a lot of questions. How does this get me to be into this position I am today? And, we had 4 very successful years there and a lot of things that were learned in Portland that I think set me up for this particular role. So yes, new being in, I guess, a high performance director type role, mm-hmm. but not new in terms of, 7, 8, 9 years worth of really kind of focusing on the performance and how it leads into the medical and the return to play. And so a little snippet into my career, but how it really, I think, helped me. I had a lot of good people along the way that I could lean on, ask phenomenal questions to, and they aren't the only ones. They're just the ones that I was able to work with day to day. It really helped put me in a position that I felt like in 2021, as we were making a run with the Timbers and this job came up, to be able to pursue to take over in 2022.
That's very interesting, just because I feel like a lot of people I've encountered in more or less the medical field itself, they're more of that kind of constant learner, always trying to grow type of outward atmosphere. So it sounds like as you were trainer and doing things, you knew you were interacting with the other side of things on the performance side. And you're like, okay, how does all this fit together? And it sounds like that set you up to be ready for this. Now, was that something you were pursuing, or was just like natural curiosity?
A little bit of both. I think it started as natural curiosity when I was in Vancouver, so started as I was going through school more, had my chance in professional sports, being an intern with the Seattle Seahawks. Didn't get much on that side. I know there's a lot of metrics that they look at in all of American football now, especially the NFL. And it was just kind of new. And as we got to Vancouver, like I say, the curiosity really started there. And it just kind of blossomed when I got into Columbus saying, hey, there's a lot more to my job as an athletic therapist, athletic trainer. I use therapist a lot because I lived in Canada for quite, you know, for almost 5 years. And so that's the term. And so it started realizing like, hey, me as an athletic therapist can grow exponentially by understanding more of another side, in this case, the performance side, and how that will actually help us, not just with healthy players, but when we do have a return to play, how do we set them up for the best success to get them back as quickly as possible, back to the loading that they're used to having, to then keep them healthy. And it, like I say, it just continued to grow and grow in Columbus. And Steve is someone who had done it for a long time. So a phenomenal brain to pick off of. And then it just kept, you know, how do I continue that on when I get to Portland to continue to bridge the gap, maybe right. Not one of more favorite terms, but to be able to bridge the gap, to keep medical and performance so close, because everything we do interacts off of one another. And If one is not successful, the other's not successful. So to continue, you know, that in Portland and have a really good staff around there that kept pushing me from both sides of it. And you know, and as that went on, saying, hey, this is a position I really want to get into. So what started as a curiosity became a route in which I wanted to get into eventually.
You start asking different questions when you're a little more serious about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that's what ended up happening, you know, and in 2020, COVID became a little bit, you know, the season became weird and you had a lot of downtime and you start asking more questions and more conversations and, you know, how the fixture congestion starts to happen. And then you get into 21 and, you know, again, another very successful season with Portland. And then, you know, hey, I think I'm ready to run an entire, but not just a medical department, but an entire, you know, high performance right. department. And if it happened, great. If it didn't, continue to learn and grow and ask more questions.
Right. So we kind of looked at kind of a big bird's eye view. I don't know if it's easier for me to like pick out something like, because I want to know more of like the process that you're doing. So whether we take a healthy player or a player that we know has had injuries or had an injury in the past, such as Enzo Capetti or Ashley Westwood, both of whom were injured this year and basically had to return to play. So what is like the planning that you see involved with that? How do you interact? You know, what teams or parties of the club are you interacting with throughout, and then kind of like what steps, almost like a timeline of things would be kind of nice to see.
Yeah. So, you know, you never want injuries to happen, but it's pro sport. The demand on the body is very high. And so, you know, unfortunately injuries are going to happen. How do we reduce the risk of injury? And then when an injury happens, how do we maybe reduce the severity of it? So that's a lot of part of, on a healthy side, what we do. I can get in more into that later, but from an injury side, okay, someone gets injured, you know, there's an evaluation process that happens by one of the therapists. Sometimes if they need me to come in just to take a look and just look at it from a different lens, I may come in and help a little bit with an evaluation process. And then obviously our team physicians are involved. Team physicians come in, you know, usually the same day or within 24 hours at the absolute latest. They see a team physician and get imaging if it's necessary, whether it's a diagnostic ultrasound or an MRI. And then when that comes back, usually we have an answer as severity of the injury within 24 hours. Then it's okay. Depending on the severity of injury, where do we start that rehab process? And that's where, as you've mentioned, Tyler Knight has been on the show. Tyler's able to start now taking that from a rehab coordinator process and say, okay, so someone like both Ashley and Enzo were very close. Ashley ended up being out about 6 weeks. So we start, okay, what is the best? What does week one look like? And try to look at it, you know, hey, here's our target. We believe we can get him back and we'll use 6 weeks. We believe we can get him back in 6 weeks. Let's work backwards. So week five, I should say at the end of week six, we know he's got to be in full training that week. The week prior, can we get him into some training into week five at the team? And then week four, hey, how are we advancing his individual on-field return to play? Week three, is that when he's starting to be out there? Week two, what are we doing in the gym to prepare them out? Okay, week one. So I worked a little bit backwards there, but week one, what are we doing to minimize pain and increase function? So minimize all of his pain, increase range of motion, increase daily living activities, and continue on through the function of how do we now then get him into the weight room and advance what he does from a gym perspective, from movements, but also then strengthening.
So what are some of the things that would mitigate pain?
So we've got multiple options. That's the best part about the health system and what we do daily. So we've got manual therapy techniques, which we classify that as using our hands. So anything that we can do with our hands, sometimes it's instrument assisted techniques that we can use. We've got ultrasounds that we can use, different than diagnostic ultrasound. We've got like laser red light therapy that we can use to help enhance the healing process, decrease the inflammation. You've got processes such as, dry needling that can help promote new blood coming into the area to help promote healing. So there's those multiple processes we can do. And then from there, we add in components of rehabilitation, which is movement. How do we get the muscle activated if it's a severe enough injury? Something that would be like post-surgery, but how do we get the muscle activated and how do we take them through a range of motion that causes no pain or very minimal, I say pain, discomfort, to allow them to continue to progress? So whether that becomes, body weight squats into adding weight, so on and so forth.
Whatever movements that they need to strengthen or.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. There's multiple ways to skin the cat.
Yeah. So, and I'm sure a lot depends on what the player is either able to do or willing to do or feels comfortable doing, because I'm sure some of them wouldn't like the dry needling, but they like something else or, that kind of thing. Even though you might know certain things might be best, it might not fit their kind of psyche. So doing all of this, you're kind of overseeing it. Of course, you're not doing the day to day. So as you plan, do you basically for yourself kind of look at each player case by case and like, okay, what are we doing with each player? And then you run down and have specific people that are like, okay, you're taking care of this. Give me the update. Is that how it works?
Yeah, exactly. So in the morning, we come in the mornings and we have a morning meeting amongst our health and performance department saying, okay, what is the daily training for that day? What are some of the metrics in which we believe we're going to hit within that training? And then we'll go through quickly of, okay, maybe there's a individual who's in their return to stage process who's on field. Okay, here's what their metrics look like. That would be matched up to the team's metrics. Mm-hmm. And then, hey, these guys are out. Okay, what does their plan look like? They're going to stay in. They've got their manual treatment. From there, they're going to hit their gym work. And then they're going to hit their like conditioning work at the end. So we talk through each player in specifics, quick specifics in the morning. We get through the day. So when that's done, I usually grab a quick bite to eat. And then I'm in with the coaches just solidifying the training, exactly what it's going to look like, how many sets, reps, or timings, or what that looks like.
So you can decide more of what the players are going to be able to do versus not do.
Is exactly that
kind of what you're gauging?
Yeah, exactly. So, if the coach says we're going to do X, Y, and Z, that's kind of nice is through one of the platforms we have. I've created a drill builder. So every session we have done, realistically, since Christian has taken over last year, is put in with exactly what we're calling that drill and all the metrics that's put in. So I'm able to go in the drill builder, put in what it is we're doing, sets the timing of it all. So I can give that to Christian and it generates what our approximate loading values on field are for our key performance indicators, our KPIs. And then from there, we've broken it down to our periodization plan, which goes, we adjust that every 6-7 games, depending on what the team metrics look like. Then that kind of identifies how we do the trainings. And then to your point, when we get to the injured guys, yes, we base it on what their individual game metrics are, but then we also try to break their days down on field very much like what the team is doing. So they're staying on a pretty good flow of the team, but maybe the first week they're out there, you know, it's 20% decrease from what the team's doing because they're just coming back from injury. And then the next week is 10%. And then the following week, they're hopefully matching up with the team and then in with the team and going from there. So those are things that I help pass along to both Tyler and or whoever's overseeing the case. And then we've got our performance side, Adam Parr, and who's kind of our head of performance, our lead performance coach. He helps with some of that planning. And then we've got Peter Gorka, an assistant strength and conditioning performance coach that really helps plan, periodize the gym with the athlete. So you can see we've got myself kind of overseeing it, and you've got Tyler with, or one of the assistant athletic therapists with Adam and Pete. So you can see how intricate the system is and how it all crosses over with one another.
But you're still having to overall see all this, because if somebody's not doing that, then they're not talking to each other, you're going to miss something.
Exactly. So oversee all that. And then a lot of times when I'm in with the coaches, you know, it is communicating, hey, this is what the team is doing, but also this is what to expect, you know, from the player coming back in a return to play. Hey, they're going to miss video today because we need to get them out early for their individualized plan to get them back. Or, you know, hey, they're going to be off to the side, you should be seeing these kinds of drills. If a coach is available at the end to help run one of those, is that possible? Right. Just trying to set the plans up kind of globally, holistically, to make sure it fits in again for the individual, but getting them back as quickly to the team as possible.
So how does the player get communicated, or how is this communicated to the player? Because it's like, it sounds like all these plans are being made without them, and you're like, here, go here, do this.
Yeah. So the nice part is whoever the lead therapist is on that will tell them what time they're in for treatment. And then, you know, the cool part is I'm sure we can get into it, is some of the technology we use, some of the platforms we have. We use Ridge Athletic, where all of our programming goes in from, I mean, you can put in from what their treatment is to what their exercises are, like exactly specific sets, reps, exercises, and that breaks down how the whole flow is. So then it's like, okay, hey, you've got your treatment, and then you've got your activation, and then we are on field. And then on field, sometimes for the player, it doesn't tell them exactly, but sometimes, you know, for note taking, it does have what their metrics is. And then it's up to the individual running the on-field session. Okay, you know what their metrics are. Maybe today is a small-sided space. So we got to get those metrics in small-sided spaces. Maybe tomorrow is our large size space. So maybe we're looking at a multi versus a linear absolute speed, where today you're not getting any sprinting, but we're getting a lot of change of direction. We're getting a lot of touches on the ball. And then tomorrow we're going to set up drills that are more open. So that is in their Bridge Athletic programming, so they can see. And then afterwards, all of their gym is in there. So it's like, hey, you're done on field. You need to go see, you know, in this case, you need to go see Pete, and he's going to take you through your gym.
So the players, sorry to interrupt, the players themselves, do you show them for kind of like a mental aspect? Like, do you show them their growth, or if it's not growth, like they're going, like, do they visually see, like, they may feel like, oh, I'm feeling better, I'm doing better, but like, hey, your metrics aren't showing this, or like, we need, do you do that?
Yeah. We do try to sit down and do with them that with them. So in the beginning, you know, again, maybe those first 48 hours, okay, how is this person progressing from an injury, and how are they not? And then it's like, okay, hey, here's a targeted return to play for you. Here's what we believe your plan looks like. And then as we go kind of week to week, the good part is players are always curious. Exactly to your point, they're saying, "Man, I'm feeling really good. I want to advance this. I want to go quicker." And it's like, okay, we can try, but this is where you're at, and this is where we have to get to. And then, you know, the data science piece into it says, okay, how quick can we get there to keep you in a safe zone of acute to chronic ratios? More so looking at what does the 2 weeks after an injury look like, as we know they're still in a risk. So how fast can we truly push? And then we sit down and try to map that out and see what it is we can do. So we've, you know, utilized their input for sure. I'd also show them along the way, like, hey, we can't push any faster for these reasons because we believe it's unsafe, again, for these reasons. And sometimes they're like, hey, no problem. And if wherever we can get a day, 2 days, 3 days to speed it up, I'd like it. And so it's like, okay, we will work together on that. And it's never.
There could be some other thing on the other end is that they're working and progressing and they're like, wow, you're progressing further than the expected.
Yeah. Yeah. And that sometimes happens. And it's like, hey, okay, you're killing it this week. Like we think we can advance you a little bit more next week. And that's okay too. You know, sometimes the body heals the way the body's going to heal. And as much as we sometimes try to speed that up, some people, you know, genetically, sometimes that gets advanced a little bit and it helps us out and we can speed that up. Sometimes it goes a little slower and what you think is going to be projected maybe takes a week longer. So it always is an evolving timeline. And that's just where that constant communication with the coaches and the management comes in saying, hey, you know what? He's not quite progressing like we thought he would. You know, his body's just not healing as quickly as we would like. And sometimes that happens. So, hey, instead of it being 6 weeks, it's going to be seven. And being in front of that early with the communication helps our whole department out.
So another side, we've talked a lot about just injuries themselves, but in the high performance side of somebody being healthy, you're also looking at how to optimize what they're doing, or even if, you know, the coaching has a different plan, like, all right, we're going to require our, you know, outside backs to have more running and more stamina. So what can we do to increase their performance since we're changing our style? Are those the kind of meetings you're into?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And we've had a few of those this year. And it's exactly that. Okay. You know, hey, maybe we're slightly changing the system up. No problem. And sometimes you don't exactly know what those demands are going to be until you get into the match and you see the outputs from the match. And then it's like, okay, hey, we're actually doing more high speed running and sprinting than we have. So, you know, hey, on Tuesday, we got to slightly adjust this. And on a Wednesday, we've got to adjust this so the body can start to get acclimated and get used to the new demand that it's going to have, but not do it too much that you put them at risk, but do it enough that the body can continue to adapt to set the team up for success. So that's exactly it. Those are some of the meetings we do in the morning and with the coaches in the afternoon. When I sit down with Christian, hey, I'm thinking about changing these for these reasons. Take a look on how that's going to change, you know, our training a bit and change the loading. And then it's, you know, that, and then that's where we have a lot of platforms that we use. You know, again, the drill builder I talked about is very helpful in that. Using Kitman Labs, we're able to, you know, that's our athlete management system. Being able to really look at multiple things at one time, because we can, I call it data dumping. We can put a lot of data into that system from
and
everything.
And pull what you need.
We do. Yep. And then create dashboards and pull what we need. So we really look at it. So then it's like, hey, Christian, you know, so-and-so is, we need to manage their load on field today. We know you want to start them on the weekend. This week, we've got to maybe decrease their load a little bit to set them up for success here. Or, hey, no, we got to push. We actually need to push a little harder to get us to where it is with the new.
And by keeping all these metrics, you're able to figure out more norms so that you know whether you're going above or below what they can have shown they're capable of.
Exactly.
Okay. Exactly. So how did you, we're going to kind of shift gears here. So how did you get into, like, why did you want to be an athletic trainer? You grew up in Boise. You were part of the Bronco mania there, the blue field and everything. I'm sure.
You got
like,
it.
What got you into it?
Yeah, it's funny. Say the blue field. I love it. I love it. I know there's people that hate it, but I've been going to games forever. And so, you know, my grandfather was a dean of an engineering building, but he knew a lot of the athletic side. They were, you know, he was a part of the athletics for a long time with American football and basketball. And so I got to know people there and I started gaining, you know, I just love sports. And then when I got into high school, our athletic trainer at my high school, just developed a relationship with him and got into one of his classes and the interest really sparked there. And, you know, we talked a lot about physical therapy versus athletic training and so on and so forth. And so as I became a sophomore and a junior, I, you know, playing sports for the school, he's always there. Hey, let me stop by the treatment room and let me see what's going on here. Let me see what he does. And that really sparked my interest. And then as I moved into college, I broke my leg my freshman year. And so going through that rehab process on myself with Randy Boswell, who was the ATC there, it just took off from there, saying, you know what, this is the career I want. It keeps me in athletics, keeps that competitive fire going a bit, even though you're not playing.
Yeah.
And there's some really cool stuff that you can do. And that just, it took off from there. And then obviously, you know, after sophomore year, I was just kind of like, you know, I just, obviously I, my leg hurts from me breaking it and having surgery. And I just don't know how hard I want to push. So let me go in the other avenue to continue to push. And so transferred back to Boise State and, you know, just blossomed from there and started working American football when I got into the program and actually worked close with Coach Pete, you know, like in that. And so he started to know everybody, you know, by name and was interested. And it's like, man, okay, hey, there's some coaches that are pretty cool. So got into that and then, you know, started working with women's soccer on the coach there, you know, everything just kind of advancing itself. And even though I did multiple, you know, summer internships, seasonal internships with the Seahawks, I was like, okay, hey, is the NFL where I want to try to stay or American football where I want to stay? Or I knew I grew up playing football, soccer. Maybe that's how I want to go. Because I think it was my first year with the Seahawks is when the Sounders came in. So it's like, oh man, okay, maybe there's an avenue. Oh, and it just kind of
they had a big explosion into the league. Definitely changed the way a lot of people felt as far as a fan environment and all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, exactly. And just being, you know, at the time we were kind of sharing the same building and they would come in much later or, you know, and it was like, okay, try to get an interest there. And you'd see some of the guys, you know, dating myself a little bit, but when Freddie Ljungberg was in and it was like, okay, he's, you know, an ex-Arsenal player coming in, like, starts to go and it's like, man, okay. And then there was just that position with the Whitecaps that came open. So, you know, each kind of year I got around new people who loved their job and saw it a different way. And it just kept giving me the fire to be like, all right, we can really change things here. And that's what really took off for me. So
that's cool. I mean, definitely you want to feel like you're affecting change by what you're doing. Now, is what MLS teams do, since you've been around many of them already, is this very similar or on par to what, you know, other sports leagues across the pond are doing with soccer, football, or is it different?
You know, I think it's very similar. Obviously, you know, this last offseason, Christian knows, I guess, you know, kind of my position, a high performance director with Real Madrid that he's worked with, you know, when he was at West Ham and for a very long time. And I was able to go over and visit and be able to sit with him and learn from him. And, you know, he's unbelievable at what he does. He's won multiple Champions Leagues. And so to be able to sit down with him and talk about preseason planning and, you know, how we look at doing activation sessions and gym sessions and planning on the field. And I came out of that, he was very impressed with what we were trying to do and how we're trying to do it. And so that obviously gave me a little bit more confidence saying, you know what, this is one of the best in the world at his job. He's been the best for many years and he's impressed with what it is we're trying to do and how we're trying to see things. And so that made me feel good that we are looking at a lot of the same things. And then it's just an execution piece, you know,
right.
We execute. They're used to playing a ton of games, fixture congestion, you know, playing every Saturday, Wednesday, right. Sunday.
Right.
And so trying to learn a little bit from that, but you know, it is very similar everywhere you go. I mean, the game demands
right.
for me are a little bit different. Obviously ours travels different than it is over there. And how do you incorporate all that? But from an overall philosophy standpoint, it's good to know that we were very similar in our thought processes.
Yeah.
For someone that's done it for 30 years, 40 years to someone like myself that's been around. This is in my 13th year in the league, but second year in my position. So it made you feel good that you're on the same track.
So you talk about the vision. Is the vision, you know, is that Latanzio's vision? Is it kind of a mixture of Latanzio, Granada, I mean, all Zorin, just all of them together saying, this is what we're trying to do here, and this is why we hired you, and this is what we want to make happen?
Yeah, and I think it was a vision that I had as well during the interview process of saying, hey, how do we set a really good foundation by hiring good people, putting good processes in place that allow for us to be able to adapt when any head coach comes in and adapt to their playing style and how it is that they want to achieve it. We know we've got good processes to set us up for success under anybody. And, you know, yes, it comes from Zorin and myself and Christian and okay, hey, this is how I want to play. How do we adapt what it is we're doing? Because it's easy for us to be able to do that. So to answer your question, it's a little bit of everybody.
Yeah.
And then how do we build a really good foundation that even if we leave, there's pieces in place that somebody else could come right in and pick up where we've left off and continue to evolve it and be able to work with anyone that comes in from a head coach to a sporting director to.
Right. All right. So you got this amazing career, amazing opportunity. You have a lot of agency in what's going on and how things are happening here. You're getting validation from Real Madrid people like, hey, this is a big thing, you know, and you got some good stuff going on. So what's the hardest part about this job?
You know, honestly, I think the hardest part is, I mean, being in a position like I am to make sure you're setting the club up for success. So whether that's at the first team level, but making sure we hire the right people at the first team level, but then again, making sure you can manage and continue to help those at the first team evolve, but then you now have Crown Legacy to think about and how do we hire the right people there, but also provide the support that's needed at that level and then into the academy. And making sure that they understand the vision and the processes that we want to go through, but they're also the ones working there. So how do we adapt and evolve?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one piece. And I'd say the second piece is just making sure that those communication channels and the communication that happens daily is spot on. You know, so for me, it's with our staff, but then I've tasked, you know, okay, hey, Tyler, you got to oversee kind of the first team medical staff. But how do we allow those individuals to grow? So we got to keep an eye on, you know, Crown Legacy Academy. And then the same with Adam Parr is, hey, Adam, I need you to really, you know, kind of oversee that performance piece and make sure Legacy has what they need and providing the support as well as, hey, this is how we like to periodize in the gym. And then Academy as well. So I think that's a tough one. And then all in the meantime, continuously communicating that to management,
mm-hmm.
and then also taking care of the day to day, week to week, month to month. In this case, with the first team, and making sure that you know we're trying to keep players healthy and on the pitch and win as many games as possible.
Well, now let's flip it around. What do you enjoy most?
I know it sounds fun. I mean, what is sometimes the hardest is also what's most enjoyable is making sure you set those processes up in place that are hopefully successful and then being able to see each level of the organization be successful. So, of course, from a first team that you work day to day is were we successful in our training plans this week to set us up for victories on the weekend, you know, three points on the weekend. And for us being obviously our second year into the league, is can we get ourselves into the playoffs this year? Can we get that? But then also, you know, knowing that we've set Crown Legacy up in a good spot and really giving them what they need, and they're having a successful season. And, you know, Academy, yes, it's starting back up, but we've been able to sign a few players through the Academy. So knowing that each level is set up for success.
You're overseeing all of that. So it's not just the players on the first team, but you're saying, okay, these Crown Legacy players, they're going up to this next level. We have to make sure they understand our processes. So when they come here, it's seamless, not just the staff you work with, but also the players. So like it needs to be similar, right?
Exactly. Yep, exactly. So the processes from each level are very similar. Maybe the intricate details are a little bit different at each level based on what, you know, can be handled by the system, by the system, by the team, by the level, by the players. And so as they come into each new level, there's always going to be a little bit more added in because we expect a little bit more, because there's always that little bit more detail to be successful at each level. And so how do we continue to advance that year by year, you know, month by month, but year by year at each team? And it's, to your point, to be just a seamless transition. So when they get to the first team, they already know what's expected. And then we add a little bit more to it to hopefully make them successful as an individual player, but then obviously help us as a club.
Right. Like a 1% change is going to make a big difference at that really high level. Whereas, you know, a bigger, you know, a different type of change at a lower level might also make a difference just because of the way they're playing.
Yeah, exactly. And you might see more change at the lower levels earlier on. So, you know, 3, 4, 5% may happen, really advance these guys. And then as you obviously get older and the level gets higher, exactly to your point, how do we find that extra 1%?
Because that's the difference between winning and losing sometimes.
It is. Yeah, you're spot on.
All right. So scariest thing in your career you've ever done?
Oh, fantastic question. You know, honestly, I would say is probably leaving Portland to move out here to take a whole new role where
new city, new part of the country. It is different here.
Yeah, right. It's, you know, it is. It's way different. So you move from something that you've grown up and you know, it's an area in which you loved it and we still love it. And obviously that's always going to be part of our hearts and home. But to move all the way across the country, yes, we've done it, Vancouver to Columbus and Columbus back to Portland, but this is even a little bit further. To take a role in which I think I'm only one of two, maybe three medical individuals in this role within the league that oversees both departments and saying, okay, hey, we're taking a club from scratch, and how do we make it successful? And it is a little bit daunting, a little bit scary, but that's also what makes the job so much fun and exciting.
Right. It's probably pretty rewarding too, that they trust you to do this.
Yeah. Yes. Very, you know, very rewarding. And again, very rewarding seeing hopefully the staff that we have hired that stays around for a long time and, you know, just everyone being a part of what we believe is building a successful foundation.
Right.
To have us make pushes for a long time.
So hopefully you can stay here a while and we can have some moments that you can kind of rewind over and over again. But is there something in your career that you've like, this was just like the pinnacle so far, that you could just be like, man, I wish I could replay that again?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I've been lucky enough. There's been a few of them for me personally, and I've been lucky enough in 2015, you know, my time in Vancouver was unbelievable, unbelievable city. And I learned a lot and I was bouncing around between first team and academy. So Columbus was my real first time full-time first team job. And so in 2015, we came in and Greg had taken over in 14 and they had a pretty successful season. They went out in the playoffs the way they didn't want. And I got there in January of 15 and there was voluntary workouts where I got there and there was 16, 17 guys. And, you know, we had obviously a very successful season and you know, being a part of a group that wins the Eastern Conference was phenomenal. Obviously, the final didn't go so well. And then I move again in 18, experience the same in 18. And honestly, I do kind of replay this constantly is, you know, we got into that Western Conference final against Kansas City. And, you know, I can remember the start of the game and them scoring and it's like, okay, we're down one, but we're okay. And then all of a sudden they score a second one. It ends up being called offside and we make it to halftime. And then, you know, all of a sudden Sebastian Blanco does Sebastian Blanco things. And I mean, to this day, I can still, you know, I still hear the words in his head after the fact, but I still see that goal constantly and the goal that just kind of
sealed it.
A spark in 2018. Yeah. And he's like, listen, I was just trying to hit the ball as hard as I could towards the net. And the way it dipped in and went in and the run we went on from there. And obviously, again, unfortunately, in 18, results didn't go well. And then the one that obviously, you know, and then you go to the MLS's back tournament and you're away from family for a long time. Mm-hmm. And being a part of that and winning that, you know, and then again, and then the last one for me is in 2021 when you win the Western Conference at home and you're able to host MLS Cup at an amazing place, an amazing atmosphere. For me, it will always be one of the top two or three in this league to be able to host something, you know, in a place like that and Timbers Army. And you want to talk about replaying a moment is Felipe's goal in the 91st, 92nd minute. I mean, literally at the death to send it to overtime. I've been a part of some moments that are really, you know, loud and exciting. But for being a 26,000 seat place at Providence Park and Felipe scoring, you know, 90 plus. Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely deafening. It was amazing. And obviously, again, you know, result didn't go our way. But those moments are for me personally are the moments that you try to push for constantly to make the playoffs to because you just never know at that point. Right. This league has demonstrated for multiple years you never know what can happen in the playoffs. So to try to set the team up for success to get on good runs this time of the year to get into the playoffs, and then it's like you just don't know what'll happen and you know, telling guys like Ashley, you know, explain, you know, Ashley's an unbelievable human being and talking about some of those moments and it gets him excited, gets me excited. He's obviously been in the Prem. He's been in some of the biggest, you know, best of the best and just talking about that stuff. It gets everybody excited. And that's what keeps the drive going is.
Yeah. And it's collective. It's not just for the players, like it's so much energy and love and passion for the winning. You don't even have anything necessarily to do with that. You do and you don't at the same time, but you're not out there at all affecting actual, you know, play. You're preparing them and getting them ready to specifics, but you're not, you know, doing drills or anything like that with them. So it's like, but you're still part of that bigger picture. And that's neat to see is that it's so tightly wound. I don't know if everybody really understands and notices that.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a few times I think in my career, especially, and I think there was one video I remember, you know, the crew staff, and I think even in Portland where you think you score goals and the angle of the camera is just right. And it shows the entire bench erupting, you know, players, but staff and like, just, you see that, you know, it's kind of a joke, like, hey guys, look, everyone's invested in this, mm-hmm. everyone is this for you. And you see all the emotions going on and, like you say, everyone's invested and they're, you know, we joke like, okay, the game's going now. Like, hopefully I have nothing to do but sit back and be a fan and watch. Right, you know, right. No one getting injured. We're not going on the field. Like it's
that's a great delight for you just to watch.
Exactly. And hopefully we've done our jobs, I say correctly, but have done them very, very well that, you know, you can go into the match and be competitive and be successful and, you know, win, lose, or draw, that you know that we set them up for the most success. And that just keeps you going every week or every, you know, 4 days, however the fixture comes in. But, you know, it's those moments and it's like, okay, then how do we learn from those moments? Like, maybe we weren't physically our best. How do we change the next week to be better and better? And
And that goes back to talking to coaching staff and everybody else and saying, what are we going to do differently? What can we change? That kind of stuff.
Exactly. It goes back to everything we've talked about. And that's what makes every week so exciting, so different.
Go again. That's the
same.
We
go again. Right? That's exactly it. And we go again, you know, and then for me, you know, being able to come home and come home to my wife. We've been married 11 years since 2012, and coming home to see her and the three kids that we've got. And that just gives you a new recharge going into the next day, weeks, months, you know, because you come home and it's like, oh, you lost. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, that stinks. And then you get right into playing something else. It's like, you know, Ted Lasso jokes and
have goldfish,
a goldfish, you know, and it's like, that's them. They say, oh, well, that stinks, too bad. And then, okay, let's go play a game, you know, and it's like, okay, you know what? Like,
yeah,
it's a game. It's life. We set up for success, but there's always that new energy every day that sparks and comes in.
Yeah. So what would you like to do that you haven't done yet in your career? Not that we want you to leave or anything like that, but like, what are your big, like, grandiose, like, this would be nice to do?
You know, I think I'm here, but to be able to take maybe even a step back more and be able to look at things more, you know, from a 10,000 foot view and be more of an administrative role that really helps with things and let everybody else execute. And then, I mean, to your point, I've touched on it a bit, and it's one step, but you know, to be a part of a team that wins the MLS Cup is massive. Been a part of CONCACAF. Tell you what, the Champions League is a cool tournament. Being able to win that, and then obviously Seattle was the first MLS team to make it to the Club World Cup. But you know, actually be able to properly push these teams in that kind of a competition, and you know, make it deep. Yeah, you know, and go there. I mean, I guess if there was ever a chance to get into Europe at a high level team to work there, that would be it. But you know, I've got plenty of things to learn before I get to that level for sure.
All right. Our last segment is called Stoppage Time. Just quick questions, and then we'll wrap it up. All right. Do you have a must-do personal ritual?
Well, it evolves
on the way games.
Trying to find, I'm a coffee snob, so trying to find one of the best coffee places in town for good coffee and
like take a local place, right?
Local
like
place that takes the staff out. So try to get a few people involved in that and go out to that. And then at home games, you know, it's again, stop and get coffee, but I usually end up stopping at a sandwich place. And as silly as it sounds, it's usually either Jimmy John's or Jersey Mike's. I couldn't tell you why, but it's always one of those, sometimes something else, but it's usually one of those on a home match. I get that, take it in with me on game day after we do our rehab sessions, sit down and eat that, and then
you're ready to go.
Exactly.
All right. Favorite unplugged activity?
Unplugged activity outside of playing with family and kids, it's getting on the golf course. I love golfing. I wish I could do it more, but
what is your... You're not a scratch. What's your handicap?
I'm the upper teens, which is okay. I enjoy it's the small things, you know. If driving's going really well, then I know for some reason my irons aren't going to be well. But if I'm not driving well, my iron play seems to be well. But if I can try to shoot, if I can hang in the mid to upper 80s, I get pretty happy.
You're watching a match. What are you snacking on?
Ooh, well, I'm usually working the match.
No food at all, huh?
Well, when I work the match, no, I grab, we've got little Power Block candies. We've got this watermelon flavor. I think they come in a packet of six. One's usually cut in half. Mm-hmm. So for the second half, I usually grab, you know, half a pack and take it out with me for the second half.
All right. So design is everywhere. Physical things, ideas, functionality. What component of design impresses you more, the interior, like inner workings of things, or the exterior?
For me, it's more the interior, the inner workings. How does each thing play with one another and integrate to one another? And how does it all match up to make the final product?
Cool. What about starting a project or finishing one? What is more gratifying?
I would say starting a project. It should be finishing, but you know, having kids and being able to like really get the project started Because it seems like once it's started, we can finish it. It's just a matter of getting it started.
Just so keep going, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Keep the momentum going. All right, what recharges you?
Honestly, being at home with the family, being with wife, kids, doing whatever adventures they want for the day. And just that for me personally is again, just hanging with the kids, whether that's a day at the pool, a day at the apple orchard, whatever it is they want to do. And then, you know, hopefully when they go down at a decent hour, being able to sit down and have a glass of wine with my wife and just be able to talk and get caught up for the day of the week.
Right.
All of that. Yeah.
All right. Last one. If you were a current player on Charlotte FC, what player would you most be like? You don't have to, not what player is, you're not choosing favorites. It's just what kind of demeanor would you have if you were out there? Like what kind of player would you be? How would you approach things? Who's That's like you?
A brilliant question. Yeah. I think we kind of mentioned on him already. We touched on
I was going to say,
I think it would be more like an Ashley type. On the field, he gets after it a bit, you know, but off the field, again, Ashley, for people that don't know, he's an unbelievable dude. Big family guy like we are, enjoys life, enjoys being with his family, but enjoys the game of football and giving his best effort. And if things don't go well, you know, how do you fix it? But then also, you know, be able to have a good laugh about things as well. So I think it's, there's a lot of good ones. We've got a really good group. I will say we've got a good group. That is a tough question. That's the hard one.
Yeah, definitely. Well, John, man, appreciate your time. Thank you for doing this. Learned a lot. And, you know, best of luck for you all the rest of the season and continued success in making stuff happen, especially now that you're all in one place.
Yeah. No, I appreciate it. The facility's been amazing. So can't wait to continue on the journey. And, you know, anytime you want me back, by all means, just let me know. I'd love to come back.
Perfect. Thanks, man.
That's it for the Charlotte FC podcast today. I hope you enjoyed listening and learning from John as much as I have. It's amazing all the technology and science that today's clubs have and how that informs decisions, much like our data-driven teaching in schools and analytics for almost any business. I like that family and enjoying life's treasures guides John's approach to his work and life while also being just a huge fan. We'll be back Saturday for the FC Cincinnati match as Eli and I talk about what we have learned since League's Cup, which includes some of our favorite segments, Voices from the Kingdom, the Royal Archives, and Regal Proclamations for the rest of the season. As always, please do us a favor and share our show, 5-star review, and comment on what you enjoyed most about the episode. We are on Instagram, Threads, Twitter, and Reddit at CLTFC Podcast. Enjoy match day!